This is Money Talk.
Now, how about lending this country $20 million, you old skinflint?
I expect to take that up with my Minister of Finance.
Well, in the meantime, could you let me have $12 until payday?
Celebrating 20 years on the air, this is Money Talk with Bob Brinker.
We are back on Money Talk. Thank you for joining us. It's great to have you with us. Money Talk comes your way each and every weekend with a toll-free line at 1-800-934-2221. That's our contact number. You know, when you look at the financial announcements that will be coming out this week, and you look for the really key announcements, I think that I think the one that jumps out, and there are several, but if you want to talk about the announcement that will get the most attention, it has to be the Gross Domestic Product report for the third quarter. That's total goods and services in July, August, and September over the three-month quarterly period adjusted for inflation. And the consensus view is that that number will come in at about 3.2%. That is an annual rate, they announced that at. And that consumer spending, believe it or not, consumer spending should be the driver in the gross domestic product number that comes out. We expect it to be in positive territory. The consensus 3.2 and could come in somewhere around that area. But also keep in mind that it was during the third quarter that the highly successful $3 billion cash for clunkers government stimulus effort took place. Now, I'll tell you what, of all the money that the government has spent, and you can argue till you're blue in the face about whether they should have done this or that, but the reality is if you take a look at all the money the government has spent, and I'm telling you they have spent a ton of money, but you take a look at all of it, you look at the, I mean, I'm speaking relative, so give me a little license here to speak relatively. When you look at the relatively tiny $3 billion that they threw into cash for clunkers, I mean, compared to all the other money, you know, $700 billion in TARP and all the rest of it, when you look at the $3 billion they threw at cash for clunkers, and you look at the results of that, I mean, you have to say they got something back. I mean, you know, I was really impressed when I saw that they had cleaned out a lot of showrooms. You remember how we had all this oversupply of vehicles? Well, they cleaned out a lot of showrooms as a result of cash for clunkers. So for $3 billion, I mean, there's no question they got bang for the buck on that deal. Whether you liked it or you didn't, they still did get the bang for the buck. And all of that, though, is in the third quarter. That's the point. So it did contribute to third quarter activity. But 3.2 is the consensus. It should be something in that general area. And if so, that will break the string of several consecutive negative quarters, which was known as recessionary times, that started in 2008 in terms of GDP and extended through the second quarter of 2009. Our guest coming up in the next segment is Dale Robin Siegel, and Dale is the author of The New Rules for Mortgages. Wow, what a timely topic this is with all we've been talking about on this subject. And we'll return with Dale on Money Talk.
Money Talk. This is Money Talk.
Welcome to Money Talk. Great to have you with us. We're going to cover some ground on this mortgage industry. It sure has been a forest leveler in the last couple of years, no question about that. Dale Robin Siegel is our author. The new book is The New Rules for Mortgages. Dale, it's great to have you with us. We thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
A lot of people have really been out of shape about this topic, Dale, because a lot of people look at a lot of these mortgages that have been made in recent years, and they really think a lot of this is responsible for the credit market meltdown that we saw last year. What are your thoughts?
I think that it is partially responsible for it. People were overextended with mortgages and home equity loans, but people were also overextended on a lot of other things, car loans, credit cards. vacations.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point of view, Dale, because I really have not heard. I really have not heard people blaming the credit meltdown on people taking vacations or buying cars, but I certainly have heard it connected to people making loans known as liar loans and no-money-down loans and negative amortization loans and 80-20 loans and all-day loans and all of these other expressions. And I've heard a lot of people that have blamed it on that subject.
Well, okay, then we can pinpoint on that one. Yeah, a lot of these crazy products that came about in the past 10 years got into the wrong hands. Wrong hands, I mean people, lenders that were offering them and buyers and borrowers that were taking these loans and were abusing them. So, yeah, it became a terrible problem. And if you want to pinpoint it, I would say it is the largest downfall in the market.
So what are the new rules for mortgages?
Well, the new rules for mortgages are we can go back 20 years in the industry, back to basics, really. Mortgages are being offered more so to people, only people that qualify for them, as it should be. So the new rules are that you need to, A, have more than excellent credit, whereas before you could only have mediocre credit, and that was fine. You need to put down a greater down payment, which is important because now there's more equity in the home. And you need to be employed, which apparently wasn't a problem before, and you need to prove it. So when you talk about no income verification, liar loans, those kind of loans, that became a whole assortment of products that people didn't need to prove income. Then it got to the point where they really didn't even need to tell anybody where they went during the day.
Well,
so
it's interesting.
That's when it got out of hand.
It's interesting, Dale, to hear you talking about the fact that people are now required to put down a more traditional or a traditional amount of money in terms of down payment. I was just reading this week, I'd like to get your take on this, I was just reading this week about some new loans you can get with government approval that require you to put 3% down. What is that?
It's probably an FHA loan.
Yeah, it is an FHA loan, but 3% down, this is the new rule, 3%?
Well, the funny thing is the FHA used to offer loans with 2% down, 2.5% down. Now it's actually 3.5%.
Okay, so this is what it's come to?
It's always been this way with the FHA. These are government-insured loans. And the FHA has always been around, the FHA mortgages. They began with being able to... The government created the FHA, so people that couldn't afford houses traditionally, this was really the vets that came back from, you know, World War II, let's go back to that era, where they were able to buy homes without a two-year job history, with little money down, with not a whole lot of credit history. These were for, you know, people, the average American that couldn't get into a home. And it was a good thing when it started out. But like everything else, it became abused. And now it's borderline being abused, yeah.
Well, it comes as a bit of a shock to some people that after all that's gone down in the last few years in the mortgage industry and all of the collapses that we've seen, the bankruptcies, the debacles, and that extended into the securitized disasters that we saw around the world, with bank vaults loaded up with securitized mortgages that didn't bear the value they were intended. It comes as a shock to some people. What do you say to listeners who are hearing you say that today people can go out and get a loan with 3 or 3.5% down after all that's happened?
Well, and again, the FHA has always been around, and this very low down payment product has always been around. It's a government-insured loan. The loan now has greater credit requirements than it did before. So whereas before you could have no credit history with an FHA loan, now they're looking for not only good credit history, but a minimum FICO score of 580 or 600 or 620. So even though you are allowed to put down less, they have increased the requirements of income. You need to have stable employment, you need to have good credit. So before, you didn't need to have stable employment, and you didn't need to have good credit. So there's really three parts to it. They've only continued with the small down payments. The other two, credit and assets, they've increased the bar. So they have tightened up on it.
Now, for our Money Talk listeners that are thinking about getting a mortgage or refinancing, and we're in this new world, your book, The New Rules for Mortgages, what are the new guidelines that lenders are using today to qualify a mortgage?
There's three factors for the borrower. There's, again, credit, income, assets. Okay? What people need to have, most importantly, is good credit. FICO scoring is the way they judge it. FICO scores go from 350 to 850, 850 being the best. Most lenders require a minimum FICO score of 620. A good FICO score is now 720, which is very high. So the better your FICO score, the better your credit score, the better off you are. The other thing that banks look at or lenders require are larger down payments. Very rarely can you do 5% or 10% down. Most banks, if you can get mortgage insurance, will allow an 85% loan-to-value mortgage. However, it's recommended that people put down a minimum of 20%, 25%, 30% down on a home. So you need more money. You need more money. And you also need more money left over in reserves. 2 years ago, you could close and walk away with a nickel in your pocket and a stick of gum. Now, the banks are requiring that post-closing reserves, 3 months' worth of payments, 6 months' worth of payments, maybe 12 months' worth of payments, depending on the program and the bank. So the banks want to see that you have money to make payments after you close. So it's a big difference from before.
And when you look at the mortgage, various mortgage offerings that are out there right now, I've been a critic of adjustable rate mortgages, and I think that certainly has been the right advice because more people, I think, have really gone into the tank on the adjustable rate mortgages than any others because they're just really not in control anymore once they sign that piece of paper. When you look at the mortgages that are out there, especially with the low rates on the fixed that are out there today, what do you tell people?
Well, I've been in this industry for 20 years. I've never liked anything but a fixed rate loan, especially for somebody's primary residence. If it's the place where you go home every night after work, your family lives there, and this is where you rest and relax, you want it to be a stable environment financially. Stable means that you have equity in your home and that you know what your monthly payment is. So when people ask me, should I get an adjustable rate, I'm saving $200 a month, I always said, look to the future, don't look short term. And that's what adjustable rates are for, short term. And in our society, we're a very short term society. It's what can you do for me today? Nobody thinks about tomorrow. That's why you see so many people getting into trouble, because they only thought short term. So I believe in fixed rate loans. You know what you have, and it's stable. And more adjustable rates, you're correct, more adjustable rate mortgages go into foreclosure than fixed rate mortgages.
Yes, indeed, and I think that's good advice, and that's the advice we've been giving on Money Talk for many, many years. Our guest is Dale Robin Siegel. Her new book is The New Rules for Mortgages. Now, Dale, we certainly get calls from listeners who are in the refinancing phase of a mortgage, especially with rates down where they are now, near historic lows. When you're going out there to refinance, obviously you have to weigh the benefits with the costs and the effort that goes into it. What do you tell people on this score?
I think what people need to do is do exactly that, a cost-benefit analysis. How do you figure that out? How much is it going to cost you to refinance? How much are you saving a month? How long are you going to continue to live in the house? I'm planning to, because you never know. How long have you already had the first mortgage? Are you going to refinance a 30-year mortgage and get another 30-year mortgage? Are you going to start right back to day one again? So often, it's not worth refinancing, especially now, because it's expensive and it's time-consuming, I just answered, I had a question today online. Somebody wanted to know what they can do as an alternative to refinancing. My answer is accelerate your mortgage payments. Pay a little bit extra each month and accelerate your 30-year mortgage into a 24-year mortgage, and you'll save a third of your total interest over the life of the loan, reducing your effective interest rate by almost 2%. Then do you need to refinance? Probably not. Most people refinance just to lower their interest rate and their monthly payment, but I always believe you should be doing a refinance for more than one reason, going from a fixed rate to an adjustable rate, consolidating a first and second mortgage, another useful tool. So you're not just going in there simply to lower an interest rate because there's alternatives by accelerating your mortgage payment.
Our guest is Dale Robin Siegel. Dale's new book is The New Rules for Mortgages. This is a topic that's been certainly in the forefront. If you'd like to talk directly with Dale about this topic, you can do so right here on Money Talk by dialing in on our toll-free line. Here it is, 1-800-934-2221. That number is good coast-to-coast, border-to-border, in the islands of Hawaii and north to Alaska. It's a toll-free line. 1-800-934-2221. You can ask your question directly to our guest author, Dale Robin Siegel, her new book, The New Rules for Mortgages. A lot of what's gone down in the mortgage industry in recent years has been blamed on the politicians, blamed on decisions that were that originated in Washington forcing lenders to make loans that supposedly they otherwise would not have made for political reasons, to be more inclusive in house ownership. How do you react to that?
I think that that's partially true. You know, owning a home is the American dream, as they put it. But that dream isn't for everybody. So politicians, as you say, decided that everybody should have the opportunity to own a home because they're in America. It's the American dream. But it's a luxury owning a home. And it's also something that you need to be financially responsible. You know, not everybody is qualified to own a home. Some people are destined to rent their whole lives, and they should not have gone from renting to home ownership simply because the opportunity was out there.
Yeah, the reason I've had a hard time with this theory that everybody should own their home, own their own home, is because they seem to have pushed it to a point where they were actually saying, de facto, this is what turned out to be the case, they actually were saying everybody should own their own home even if they can't afford it and it's going to wind up a train wreck, because that's what happened.
Right.
And so it was really very, very bad counsel to be providing the nation by the politicians that promoted it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that being a part of it, I also think that Wall Street was a big part of it. You know, the secondary market was really the evil in this whole formula, because it became a mortgage was no longer Mr. and Mrs. Smith owning a home.
Right, right.
A mortgage was now just an equity being sold in the global market.
Piece of paper sitting in a vault in Geneva or London.
Croatia.
Or wherever.
Yeah.
All right. We've got our guest, Dale Robin Siegel, ready to take your questions. Her new book, The New Rules for Mortgages. Call in 1-800-934-2221 across America right here on America's Money Program, Money Talk.
This is Money Talk. This is Money Talk.
Back on Money Talk. Thanks for joining us. Get more customers with your own business website. Intuit Websites makes it easy. Just pick a style that fits your business, then customize, publish, and get found in 3 easy steps. Get a 30-day free trial at intuit.com. We're back on Money Talk, and our guest is Dale Robin Siegel, and Dale's new book is The New Rules for Mortgages, and I'll tell you what, they're lighting up like a Christmas tree at Money Talk. Everybody wants to talk to Dale, so let's get right to it. Let's start out in Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh.
Rick, you're on with Dale. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. This is Rick from Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi, Rick.
Hi. I really enjoy the discussion, And I just wanted to commend you on your point of recognizing that it was a lot of it was the financial services industry. A lot of people made loads of money with these kinds of debts that were set up. And there was a friend of mine's nephew that was making $120,000 a month in New York City to sell these bad loans.
Huh.
And there was tremendous money to be made. He was 24 years old. So the idea somehow that there were all these irresponsible people doing it, there was a lot of shenanigans going on, and they were said, oh, you can refinance in a year, don't worry, and be happy. And there was a lot of shading of the truth. And it's kind of interesting. The same questions weren't asked of the GIs coming back of World War II. Do you have more than 3% down? No, but there wasn't the money to be made. As you indicated, you know, from the CMOs, the collateralized debt obligations, Wall Street, I mean, it was a nice dance there. Everybody was making lots of money, and they were getting winked at in Washington. We don't do any regulation. This is the ownership society. Whatever you want goes. What do you think about that view?
It's partially true, but what people don't realize is that it only rained money for a few years. So people were acting that this period of prosperity was never going to end. And it was really 3 or 4 year period when there was a lot of money made in the mortgage industry, right? So it was a short amount of prosperity, and young people of the age of 24 that were making $120,000 a year, unfortunately for them it was short-lived, and I'm sure they spent every nickel they made. So he's probably back living with his parents.
Yeah, you could have something there. You're probably right about that part. All right, let's go to Hercules, California. Nima, you're on with Dale. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
What's up?
I bought a house last year, June of last year, and I put a lot of money down. So the final cost was $427 for me, and now it's worth $340.
Mm-hmm.
But my loan that I have is a 5-ARM, and it's $367 left. So I'm trying to do the refinance, but because the house, you know, the appreciated value, you know, they don't do the refinance. And mm-hmm. they offered me to do the loan modification, and they turned me down also because I had about $30,000 in my bank account. So what's the option for me left? Should I just wait until, you know, the house go back up and, you know, mm-hmm. to do the refinance, or just what should I do? I'm just confused.
I think that you just wait. The value of your home will go back up. You know, if you owe more than the house is worth now, that's called being upside down on your mortgage. If you're not planning on moving or going anywhere and you can afford your payments, keep making them.
Okay. It's not a good idea to pay down because, you know, I heard the interest rate is going to go back up too. I shouldn't put like $30,000, $40,000,
$50,000 down. No, I wouldn't savings account and buy down my mortgage. It's always very important to have a reserve. So keep going the way you're going. Keep your assets. Make your monthly payment, and you'll be fine in a couple years.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. The mighty WLS Chicago. Elania, you're on with Dale. Go ahead.
Hi, Bob. Love the show.
Thanks.
My question is, with having a being 7 years into a 15-year mortgage and having a home equity, the mortgage would be about 100 and then equity about 80. Is it better to keep them separate or to combine them? The primary mortgage is at like 4.5%. And the other one, of course.
That.
And then just do the variable. But I know with inflation coming, is it not better to get into a flat rate on that one?
I would keep making my payments on my first mortgage as is, and if you could pay down larger portions of the home equity loan, I'd pay it down. But keep it open, but pay it down. But I think you're fine for the next few years.
Now, Dale, when someone is looking for a mortgage or a refinance of an existing mortgage, there are various ways that you can go out there, especially in the Internet age, and get the various rates that are out there. There are companies out there like HSH Associates, which is located in North Jersey. It's been around for decades, and they do a really good job of going out there, seeing what rates are available, making the information available, sometimes for a small fee. And as you know, a lot of the Sunday editions of major newspapers, while we still have them with us, are publishing charts, tables in their financial section of various mortgages held in a given metropolitan area. When you're looking at a situation where, and we have listeners all over America we're talking to now, not just in the Big Apple. When you have people out there that are looking for the best deal on a mortgage, what do you think is the best way for them to go about finding out, you know, what is out there so that I can select the best deal, I can make a judgment?
I think that going back to those HSH and other listed rates, the unfortunate thing about those rates is that they're old. By the time they get published, they're 4 days old. So rates change every day, sometimes 2-3 times a day. How do you find the best deals out there? What you need to do is shop around. Use a mortgage broker, use a mortgage banker. If you were happy with the first person that you got your loan with, go back to them and say, you know, what should I do? You know, you need to be comfortable. And again, it's not always worth refinancing. So you need to do your own due diligence and your own shopping. And it's no longer a cocktail conversation and I got this interest rate or this guy in my office got this deal or whatever. Everybody has to be responsible for themselves and go the extra mile.
Now, as you know, Dale, mortgage brokers in recent years, all as part of this, the unraveling of this thing, many mortgage brokers, let's put it that way, really have a bad name as a result of what went on. Some very, very disturbing stories out there involving mortgage brokers, not only the absurd amounts of money they were making at as 20-somethings, but the way they were turning over the business and the stories that we know are true, that there were mortgage brokers out there that really didn't care about the viability of the loan that was signed. They just wanted a piece of paper that they could pass on so their firm could resell it and then move it through the chain in the securitization chain. And so a lot of mortgage brokers got a really bad name through all of this.
Right.
Now you tell people do the due diligence. You mentioned using mortgage brokers. How are people to react to that now?
I think that a good loan officer is a good loan officer. It doesn't matter where they work, whether they work for Wells Fargo or whether they work for a small mortgage brokerage company. You know, there are people, of course, there's always the handful of people that give everybody else the bad rap. But usually the handful of people were brand new in the business, inexperienced, untrained, you know, people that were just going after the fast dollar, and now they're gone. So who's left in this industry? The people that have been around for a long time, that have good reputations and great experience. But again, the consumer, A, needs to go by their gut. They can't, if it's too good to be true, then it is, right? And they also need to go and double check what somebody is telling them. So I am a mortgage broker and I don't have a problem. I've never, okay, personally, put somebody in the wrong direction to make a couple of bucks. But I know that a lot of people out there do. So the person needs to be careful who they go to. The guy at a big bank can also put them into a very bad product, and that happens very often with large banks because they have the same people working there, you know?
Now,
so it's up to the individual you use.
Now, many of our listeners will counsel their parents on what to do in a given situation. We've heard stories. We've heard stories of scams involving reverse mortgages,
yeah,
involving preying on the elderly. What should people be on the lookout for?
I'm so not into the reverse mortgage, okay? I don't like reverse mortgages. For some reason, it seems to be very inviting. I think it's confusing. Okay, basically a reverse mortgage is that, you know, people think the bank is paying me. What they're doing is they're taking the equity out of your home little by little. I have a client, I'll give you for instance, I have a client now, a daughter. She's a teacher. She owns the home with the mother. The daughter and the mother are doing a cash out refinance, 30-year fixed at 5%. For $200,000, they're taking the money out and they're putting it in the bank. And they're using that money the way they want to. All right? So I'm not big on reverse mortgages, but if a person feels a need to get one, I would only recommend going to a large commercial bank that has a reverse mortgage department, okay? Because there you're going to a direct lender. There is no third party involved.
All right. Linda is in Seattle. Linda, you're on with Dale. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, well, my mortgage is under $100,000 right now, and I'm paying 6.25%. I've got no debt whatsoever other than my mortgage, and I have over 3 years in reserve right now. Very comfortable living for that. Question is I keep paying more and more on my mortgage every month, anywhere from $600 to $900 more on the principal. How should you pay your mortgage off as soon as you can, if you're able to?
My philosophy is yes. Okay, I'm all for debt-free living. So if you have the extra money and you want to pay down your principal, then do it. All right. You can always stop doing it if something comes up.
Well, while you say that, and while I hear you, Dale, I don't think you would say that to somebody that had an extremely low mortgage rate of, the lowest possible rate. If they somehow got an extremely low rate, you might not say that to them.
No, she's at 6.25%.
But that's a higher rate.
Extra money.
Yeah,
it's a higher rate. I mean, if somebody's at 3% or they only have 5 years left on their loan, they're not paying any interest whatsoever or very little, then it doesn't really make any sense. But sometimes emotionally or psychologically, people are at a point in their lives when they don't want that extra monthly payment, reaching retirement or something like that.
Dale, you are so popular today. It's amazing the calls that are coming in from all across the country. Mel is in Illinois. Mel, you're on with Dale. Go ahead.
Hi, Dale. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
I just took out a bank line of credit of, I'm just for $50,000. I don't plan on coming close to even using hardly any of it. I just took it out for cash flow because when I do retire, I'm not going to get any money coming in for about a month and a half, 2 months, and I'm going to just take out $3,000-$4,000 and live off of that. And then I'm going to get my big hunk of, from the retirement. I'm just going to pay it off and as soon as I can.
Okay.
What do you think of that, Dale? What do you think of that?
I think it's fine. Home equity loans are great in case of emergency. Home equity loans are not supposed to be used to buy luxury items. So you made a good plan to take out a line of credit before you retire. So that's a good idea.
When the government came into this years ago and told the banks that they had to stop redlining, and obviously we all know there were redlining practices that were inappropriate. There's no question about that. Nobody's arguing that point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the government came in there and really put an end to the redlining and then pushed the banks into making loans that really didn't work out too well in some of these areas that were in question, did they do the right thing?
Again, with all good intention, things get blown out of proportion. So did they do a good thing? I would say in some cases, for some people, the answer is yes. But then, of course, there came the group that learned how to abuse it and get the loopholes. So I guess in hindsight, I would say yes. They did do a good thing, but of course it was abused. So that became a bad thing.
Ken is on the line in Merced, California. Ken, you're on with Dale. Go ahead.
Hello, Bob. Hiya. Dale.
Hi, Ken.
I'm considering the difference between refi and a home modification loan. Right now, my job went to Canada, and fortunately I managed to get a pension. But my pension, 75% of my cost of my home loan at 6.5% is my pension. It's 75% of my pension.
Uh-huh.
I'm still relatively young. I'm just wondering whether the refi would help me at 6.5%, whether it would lower it down to 5%, and whether that would be the better route to go, or whether it would be better to go with the loan modification.
How big is your mortgage, your outstanding mortgage?
Okay, I owe 25 years on it, and it's only $80,000.
You know what, honestly, I think that refinancing, even if you get 5% or 4.5%, is not going to make that much of a difference on your monthly payment. So I would leave it alone.
I checked, and it looks like about $100.
Well, if $100 is worth it, you have to see how much it's going to cost you to do the finance or the modification.
Yeah, what advice would you, in closing, what advice would you give to our Money Talk listeners who are either two categories? The first category, they're looking for a mortgage going into this market where the prices are down, affordability is up, rates are down. They're looking at this marketplace now and saying, you know, this is a good time. I want to go out and purchase a home and take out a mortgage. What advice would you give to those people that are listening to you on Money Talk right now?
I think that even if it's a good time, you know, in the world out there of real estate, it has to be a good time for you personally. You need to be ready to buy a home. You need to be financially solid. You need to know your job is not on the line. You need to be able to pay your bills on time. Okay, so even though it might be a good time to buy a house because prices are lower now, it might not be a good time for you.
And how about with reference to the other category, which would be the Money Talk listeners who are looking at the possibility of a refi? What should they be deciding upon?
They need to decide what the difference in the monthly payment is. If you're saving $100, is it going to cost you $4,000 to refinance? Divide $100 into $4,000, and that's how many months it's going to take you to recoup the cost.
And whenever you're making a decision about a mortgage and the interest rate and all the rest that goes with it, and you mentioned this earlier, it's really important to ask yourself reasonably, how long will you stay in this property? Because that's a big part of the equation.
That was part of the problem. A lot of people bought houses and took out these cockamamie loans because they didn't think they were going to be in the houses that long. So if you really think, a person knows they're not going to be in a house for a long time if they work for a large company and they get transferred every 3 years. But just because you think this house is too small for you and you're going to outgrow it in 3 years, life gets in the way of your plans and you might wind up being in that house for 10 years. So buy something and do something more stable.
Dale, we thank you so much for your time. Dale Robin Siegel, Dale's new book, The New Rules for Mortgages. I think you set a record for calls in a guest segment. We congratulate you on that,
thank you.
We wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
This is Money Talk.
Money Talk. This is Money Talk.
I want to thank our guest, Dale Robin Siegel. Tell you what, a lot of you interested in that subject of mortgages and refinancing and the whole nine yards, and you sure did show it with your phone calls today, and we thank you for that, and Dale does as well. I want to thank our producer, Meredith Oakes, our program coordinator on Money Talk, Ravi Chandran. I want to thank our technical director, Jay Grayowski. And today, in New York City, counting for the knockdowns at the bell, Angel Bordon, with help from Bob Mack today. Thanks for listening. That's All She Wrote on America's Money Program, Money Talk.